Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
You can stick it to the man and big tech. Join our FTL social mastodon at social.freetalklive.com.
Free Talk Live. You can join the show here. Join us at 603-283-6160. That's our number. The phones are open, and you can bring up anything you want to discuss. That's what we do here on Free Talk Live. Open phones every night. And we're here live 7 nights a week. Here tonight, it's Ian
and Chris.
Join us online anytime you want. Just head over to freetalklive.com. And you can get behind what we do here at Free Talk Live, as Suzanne Borjo has done. She is a gold-level supporter of the show, which means she's doing $10 a month over at amps.freetalklive.com. That's amps.freetalklive.com. AMPS stands for Advertise, Market, Promote, and Support. It is a way for you to support our mission of spreading the ideas of liberty and peace and freedom and cryptocurrency and other alternatives to the state system every single night of the week on broadcast radio and online as well. It's been a really good week so far this week with the new show clock that we've introduced, where we cut out two entire breaks an hour. If you've been listening, you probably already noticed the difference. That also means we go to the phones here, in many cases, with unscreened calls, because we don't have the budget for that kind of thing. So let's talk to this person here. You're on the air on Free Talk Live. Go ahead.
Hello?
Hey, you're on the air. What's your name?
Yeah, you were talking about cryptocurrency and a central bank digital currency.
We were.
And it just so happens that I have written quite a few articles on this subject, and okay. I also give presentations on it at tech conferences. You know, there aren't really many accredited experts on this right now, but I'm kind of in it pretty deep.
All right.
And I'll be happy to tell you some of the things about it that I've been able to figure out over the past few years.
Well, tell me, first of all, what are the big banks proposing for what their involvement ought to be in this? Because we know the major idea, the major concept of the central bank digital currency is that the Federal Reserve would have total awareness of everybody's transactions and likely
100%.
likely that all welfare payments and government payments would be issued through it. But we know the Federal Reserve Bank is made up of these big banks, and they're not just going to go disappear just because the Federal Reserve.
Well, you're absolutely right on this. There's a couple of points on this that you're bringing up. First of all, the way that they will try to force people to use it is by making it impossible to avoid, by giving, you know, Social Security checks and things like that only through the CBDC, which means you can't avoid it. Like the gentleman that called in earlier that didn't want to give his bank account, well, tough. We're not giving you an option. You have to, right? But secondly, this presents an existential threat to the big banks, because the truth of the matter is we already have digital currency. Your debit card uses digital currency, PayPal, whatever. And so all this really does is kind of create an end around on the big banks, right? The Federal Reserve will be your bank. They will be your bank account. And that's pretty dystopian if you really think about
it. Sure.
Now, one solution that they're trying to come up with, because certainly the big banks aren't going to take this flag down,
right,
is that, believe it or not, they're actually trying to create two different versions of the CBDC. One will be a private, shall we say, internal CBDC that will be used between the government, between the big banks, et cetera. And then there will be what they call a retail CBDC, which is the CBDC for you, me, and everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And they will have two different functionalities to them. But the retail CBDC really is pretty dystopian, and I try to avoid conspiracy theory stuff, but this would require you to use a digital wallet approved by the federal government.
Mm-hmm.
All of your currency, the CBDC, will be tracked. Of course, they would be able to limit things like what you can buy, how much you can spend. They could take money out of it immediately. I mean, the federal government would have complete control over the wallet. And the real push for the CBDC, of course, is a response to cryptocurrency, because Bitcoin and the more advanced cryptocurrencies really do pose an existential threat to centralized fiat.
Yeah.
You know, the different fiat currencies around the world, they're in real trouble once people start using crypto. And rest assured, the federal government absolutely understands this.
Sure, and that's why they're trying to head this off by coming out with a CBDC as soon as they possibly can. But just to focus on your idea of the idea you're proposing here that you've heard about, this double-sided CBDC where there's the internal banker CBDC for internal settlements, and then there's the retail one. What would the big banks be involved in when it comes to the retail CBDC? Would these wallets be administered by the big banks? Would Bank of America have its own CBDC, quote-unquote, wallet that's sort of branded as their bank? Or would this be straight with the Federal Reserve? Would accounts be held?
This would be straight with the Federal Reserve.
Okay.
Right? But you see, what you're touching on is the problem that ultimately has not been figured out. If, and again, in a crazy dystopian world, you and I use the Federal Reserve as our bank account through this CBDC, what we're doing is taking all the liquidity out of the commercial banks.
Mm-hmm.
The CBDC would do exactly what cryptocurrency is doing, and that's render commercial banks unnecessary.
Right.
I don't need a commercial bank if Uncle Sam holds all of my money. And so,
hold on. Before you go on. You don't generally for like day-to-day transactions, but loans, the Federal Reserve is not going to want to, they're not going to want to have an office where the average person who needs, you know, a $5,000 car loan is going to come in and sit and fill out paperwork to get an approval. So that would, that I would presume that would still be left to the big banks to play with.
Of course it would, but where are the banks going to get the money that they loan out? If Uncle Sam is holding all of your money, you don't have any money in the big bank.
Well, no. You should know, but you should know that the banks don't actually loan out money that they have. They create it. They have fine.
Well, they do.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so you're right. And so it's a really vexing problem because yes, it will suck liquidity out of the banks. But of course, yes, you're right. Uncle Sam wouldn't be involved in giving loans. That would still rest on Bank of America and J.P. Morgan and the like.
Right.
Ultimately, though, the CBDC really is just a response to the very real threat that blockchain-based assets, i.e. Bitcoin, Ethereum, et cetera, pose to fiat currency.
You know, it is
borderless, immutable currency that no central entity can control is not what the Federal Reserve wants.
Scares
them to death.
I got a question for you. How are they going to deal with the 3%, 3-6% that they normally charge merchants, right? Like, I mean, are merchants going to, is there a fee structure that's laid out with this retail digital currency? I mean, I can't imagine that the banks are going to be willing to give up that, you know, that cushy income stream.
I agree 100%. And it is a very, very cushy income stream. And people don't necessarily understand that. You know, when Visa and MasterCard, your debit card that's a Visa MasterCard, people don't understand that those are actually managed by banks.
That's right.
So it's
right.
The bank that gets that merchant fee. Visa and MasterCard are just the computer software that runs it.
Mm-hmm.
And you're absolutely right. With a CBDC, you wouldn't need to use a debit card anymore. Or you wouldn't need to use a Visa or a MasterCard debit card anymore. And so you're absolutely right. It puts an end around those merchant fees, and I might add, cryptocurrency does the same thing.
But yet, as we mentioned, this what they're calling the digital dollar pilot program that they've been running since mid-November, they list MasterCard as one of the entities involved in this pilot program.
Mm.
So they're in on the ground floor of this with an ear at the federal government to, you know, whisper in it and say, oh, here, this is how it should work. You know, like, so they're going to try to, like you're saying, the word you use is correct here. It's a vexing problem for them because on one hand, they want to have total central control of everything. But on the other hand, they are the big banks and they don't want to screw their big banking buddies.
Do you think this might be intentionally they want this to fail? Like they're setting it up to fail just so that they can ban cryptocurrency? Like, because I'm trying to figure out, like, what is the angle here? Like, why would MasterCard, why would banks be in favor of a digital, you know, any kind of digital currency?
What it is they understand the true existential threat that cryptocurrency poses to fiat. And so what they're desperately trying to do is find a way to compete with cryptocurrency. Okay? These are and this is when I give my presentations, this is what I say. These are the horse breeders trying to find a way to compete with automobiles.
Mm.
Okay? You know, Henry Ford has come along, the Model T exists, and they're the horse breeders desperately mm-hmm. trying to come up with some way to compete. And ultimately, it's just not going to happen. Ultimately, we are moving into an entirely new phase of how we transfer assets, what we call money. We are taking the central control by the Federal Reserve of currency. We are taking that away, and they don't know how to solve that problem.
Well, I appreciate your optimism that you don't think that ultimately this is going to work in the long run. I hope you're right about that. But tell me, I asked you in the beginning what your name was. You mentioned you write articles, give speeches.
My name is Trevor Smith.
Trevor.
I wrote for a Bitcoin news website called Bitcoinist for a while.
Okay.
And now I travel and I speak on it. And I was just,
cool.
I was listening to your show and I decided to call in.
Great, man. Anything else you want to share tonight, Trevor?
Well, I would say that before anybody gets involved in cryptocurrency, and of course we know a lot of people, what is it now, 14% of the American public now own cryptocurrency?
Oh, okay. That's good.
Do your research. Study it. Do not buy any of it until you actually understand how it works. Because we know that a lot of people just got burned with FTX. And I'm sure you've heard of that. That's
oh, yeah.
News.
Yeah, we talked a lot about that.
That wasn't a failure of cryptocurrency.
Nope.
That was a failure of the central entity that was holding people's cryptocurrency. And so people that, you know, well-meaning, perfectly honest people that say, I'm going to buy Bitcoin, I'm going to buy Ethereum, but they don't necessarily know how it works.
Yeah.
Well, they bought it from FTX. They let FTX hold it. FTX went
bust,
and now they're out.
Whoops, yeah.
Exactly. So
not your keys, not your coins, which is, you know, the old lesson.
Not your coins. 100% correct.
It's a lesson that has been taught again and again, and it will be taught again in the future because FTX is not going to be the last example of this happening.
You're not kidding there. And so, you know, education. You have to learn how this works before you get it. And I encourage people to learn about it because blockchain is here to stay. It is absolutely
no doubt.
Here to stay. And it is a positive. It will be a net positive, even if it will be a bumpy road to get there. And once you start to study it, as I'm sure you know, you just immediately go into the deep end because you realize what kind of a revolution we're dealing with.
Yeah.
This is not small. This is huge.
Yep, absolutely. I mean, we've been longtime advocates for financial freedom here on Free Talk Live all the way back before crypto, and we were big fans of, you know, using gold and silver, and still to this day. I mean, we love the gold back here, which is a really cool alternative to using dollars in physical reality, and then, of course, cryptocurrency as well, which I would use if I weren't on insane bail conditions that prevented me from using it, thanks to the federal government cracking down. They've been cracking down, as I'm sure you've been following, with the SEC attacking companies and developers like Library and Ripple, and then, of course, the FBI going after people for running crypto vending machines and selling peer-to-peers. So, I mean, they're going all in on the attack against cryptocurrency.
They are going in all in. I mean, you are not kidding on that. But see, the problem is we have free speech in this country,
mm-hmm.
and you can't censor computer code. And that ultimately, that's all crypto is. It's just computer code.
Yeah.
And they can't shut down the internet. And you mentioned the
Ripple. I tried explaining that to the jury, and it didn't help. Just so you know.
No. Well, you know, sorry to hear that.
Yeah.
But you mentioned the SEC and the Ripple lawsuit. The SEC is trying to turn Ripple into a security, or that's their argument that Ripple is security. And as you probably know, the SEC is losing that case. They're losing in a big way.
Are they?
Ripple is
different results in the library.
Yeah, and Library, too. And Library is who they're going after next.
No, they won against Library. Library is going to go down in flames, it looks like. The only thing they haven't figured out is how much, you know, flames they're going to, how much gasoline they're going to pour on this fire. We're going to be attending the latest hearing that's going to come up later this month for the Library quote-unquote settlement, where Library is expecting to not only go out of business, but maybe also lose even more than their business in some way. Like, the SEC is not, they're not satisfied with just destroying Library as a corporation. They want to also destroy Odyssey, which is this sort of semi-related platform that they have for sharing videos online, and probably even worse than that. It's ugly. So they did find that the Library token in federal district court here in New Hampshire is a quote-unquote security, and that, to me, does not bode well for the Ripple case.
Well, I was going to say, you never want to presume what the court will rule until the ruling comes down.
Yeah.
You're certainly correct. But Ripple has been making an extremely strong case.
Yeah, there's a difference between those two cases.
There is, for sure.
They're similar, but they have different arguments.
And of course, you know, like Bitcoin, remember, Bitcoin was specifically designed so that it could not be censored or shut down. You know, it's like Napster. You know, when people ask me what's the best analogy, I say it's like Napster 20 years ago. And yes, they were able to shut down Napster, but they couldn't shut down file sharing. The minute they shut down Napster, five more popped up.
It's probably more similar to, I believe, Kazaa. Was it Kazaa?
Mm-hmm.
That was one of them.
Yeah.
No, LimeWire. Sorry,
LimeWire.
It's closer to LimeWire because LimeWire, even after they shut down LimeWire, FrostWire continued for a long time, and FrostWire was literally just it was LimeWire except without the without some of the limitations of LimeWire in terms of its speed.
Trevor, thanks for calling tonight. If you have final thoughts, go ahead.
Well, the best thought that I would have here is educate yourself and be prepared for a very interesting decade. No question about it.
Thank you, man. Appreciate the call. Thanks for weighing in here tonight. I appreciate the expertise. And then again, Trevor Smith, Colin, former author there at, he said, I think it was Bitcoinist, the website.
Yeah.
Now lecturing and writing articles about the CBDC. Glad people are paying close attention because we definitely need that. Sydney is on the line in Pennsylvania. Go ahead, Sydney.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. That was a very insightful call. I actually hope that guy calls back, you know, in the future because
he
can actually, give insightful information. I wanted to talk about Bitcoin also.
Sure.
He was optimistic that Bitcoin would win. I personally really like Bitcoin. I like alternative currencies, cryptocurrencies, alternative methods to transact gold, silver, other methods. But I'm not optimistic like he is. So I wanted to talk about a scenario because you guys have been talking about a lot with like CBDCs today and Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm.
With Bitcoin, there's only going to be a certain number of tokens in total. When all the mining has found all the, you know, Bitcoins, I think it's around 18 million. Is that right?
21 million, but there have been some that have been lost. I've heard estimates as high as like 2 to 4 million Bitcoins are like lost forever. They're in wallets that no one has access to. They've lost the keys.
Yeah, I exactly wanted to get to that. That aspect of it. So people anticipate it would end up being the reverse of the fiat system, whereas in the fiat system, they can print as much money as possible.
Yeah.
In the Bitcoin and possibly also the precious metal realm, eventually you get to all of it and there's a limited supply. So I think that that's advantageous versus the fiat system.
Sure.
Because it gets you back to your principles with economics. So sound money, I think, is essential. I think a lot of the dysfunction that we see in the world is simply because money has become totally perverted.
Sure.
So, we're all working for it. It's fake. It's manipulated. And, you know, so I'm not optimistic at all. They'll pass laws to ban Bitcoin, ban activities related to Bitcoin. You know, I'm optimistic about the technology. I'm optimistic about freedom in the future. So I wanted to get to Bitcoin about this loss. Eventually there'll be a certain number of tokens. Let's say there's widespread adoption. People are using it, you know, through, let's say, the Lightning Network or something else, just some fantasy world. And let's say that there are hackers that have their own store of Bitcoins. And as soon as they get Bitcoins, they destroy them. So they lose their passwords on purpose. So let's say, somebody does.
Why the hell would they do that?
That's going to be expensive.
Well, it would push up the value of what's left over. And then, so I want to get to is.
But why would they do that? Why would individuals who
have a stash of it?
Because what?
They already have a stash of it.
But why wouldn't they want more? Like, why wouldn't they? There's no economic incentive to destroy your own Bitcoins.
We'll take it off the market. You know, they could keep the password, but keep it completely off the market. So
you're not going to increase the value enough by destroying some of your own Bitcoin to then have
to make up
more,
the difference.
Right, to make up the difference. Like, I don't think that makes
any
sense.
And even if you don't use the coins, like there's a lot of Bitcoin that are just sitting today. They haven't been moved in years, if ever. They're just sitting there. But in theory, they could be moved at any time. So there's no way to know.
Right.
The market has to price all that into the Bitcoin price. So, you know, what you say you're going to do with your Bitcoins doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, I mean, even if you said you destroyed, you know, your private key or whatever that held, I don't know, 2 million, you know, worth of Bitcoin. How can anybody know
how
for sure, right?
That, yeah.
I mean, it could be you have a copy, or somebody else has a copy, or I don't know.
Well, so for example, the federal government in Ross's trial, they got a lot of Bitcoins from that one, and there have been subsequent seizures of many types of cryptocurrency, and they sell these cryptocurrencies using a process They're probably bound by law, but it's been, you know, a decade of cryptocurrencies. And I think that that's chump change to them, but them also just holding on to it, you know, that doesn't possibly give them much utility. So, you know, like if they had kept Ross's coins until the peak of Bitcoin last year and then put them on the market, okay, it would have brought down the price, but they could have achieved a better price. But they sold them almost immediately. I think that, Ian, they took some things from you and they're going to liquidate those. They would wouldn't they liquidate those things?
They certainly would. As soon as the, I don't know if they have to wait till the appeal or if they can just get cranking, you know, once the sentence comes down. I'm not sure what the restrictions are on when they can do that, but I suspect they can
hearing before they can do anything, I would think.
I think they just have to file a motion.
So I'm no expert, perhaps that previous person I called. It's just sort of the inversion of our current world, where instead people are holding on to things that become more and more precious as time goes by. Either they're divided up more among, you know, greater pool of participants, or there's a loss going on, people losing their passwords. They're becoming less and less Bitcoins over time, and people possibly hoarding them, you know. So I think gold has that same sort of restriction. And I'm just playing with the idea. I'm just throwing out that hypothetical.
Well, one of the problems that I think you may be alluding to here without maybe using the name of it is this. There's a sort of economic rule or theory that essentially says bad money chases out good money. And what that means is that, you know, given the choice, somebody that has dollars and somebody that has crypto or gold is more likely to spend the dollars because they understand that those are losing value over time, and so therefore if they have them, it makes more economic sense to get rid of them. If you're going to spend the thing, you spend the thing that's going to drop in value faster, right? So that's one of the things that crypto is actually working to try to defeat, and it's the trickiest, I think it's one of the trickiest parts to getting crypto adoption out there. And this is something that, Chris, you and I have been dealing with for, you know, half a decade or something like that now, wherein even dealing with activists who know better, who should know the value of using crypto, know that if you don't use crypto, it does not have value. It has to be useful in order for it to be valuable, but yet they will hold on to it, and they'll just keep it and, like you're saying, not use it, and then hope that it just goes up in value. Meanwhile, they're spending dollars, and that's not helping the crypto economy. It's actually hurting it, but it's sort of a natural thing. It's an issue that's very, very hard to defeat. The only way that I think it'll be defeated is if you somehow incentivize people to pay with crypto by giving them a discount, and we just don't see that often enough.
Absolutely. Yeah, you're absolutely right. We need to use these technologies, not just only talk about them. And, you know, we need to live our principles as much as possible.
Thank you, Sydney, for the call tonight. I totally agree with that sentiment, which is, of course, why I think that liberty-minded crypto people need to concentrate their physical jurisdiction. They need to be in the same area to where they can interact with each other with cryptocurrency, and they can buy things from local businesses with it as well. And that's, of course, what we're doing here in New Hampshire. You can join us, check out the Free State Project, check out the Shire Society. More coming up.
If you're like most Americans, you can see things are out of control. Global problems have local consequences, too many of them. And if the next news headline spins us into chaos, you'd better be ready. Grocery store supply chains are only as strong as their weakest link. Don't wait for them to break. Today's the day to secure emergency food for everyone in your family. My Patriot Supply is America's largest preparedness company. Our specially packaged and delicious food stays fresh for up to 25 years in storage. It'll be there when you need it. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and pick up several emergency food kits. There are a dozen different sizes that average over 2,000 calories per day. As we all know, calories equals energy equals survival. And as you'd expect from a true preparedness company, our food kits are in stock and ship quickly. Those who know what's coming are preparing today. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com. MyPatriotSupply.com.
USA News Update. The House adjourning until 10 p.m. Eastern tonight. This comes as a small group of conservatives is once again keeping Kevin McCarthy from becoming Speaker of the House.
How about getting together and just finding the ability to how we all going to work together? It's new for us, one, being in the majority, but being in a tight majority. I think at the end of the day, we're going to be more effective.
McCarthy added he thinks eventually he'll get the votes and become Speaker. Enough of the conservatives voted against the Californian on the 13th and most recent ballot to deny him the gavel. McCarthy
McCarthy is getting more conservatives to switch their votes in his favor, albeit very slowly. A woman has life-threatening injuries, and a six-year-old boy is in custody after a shooting at a school in southeastern Virginia. It happened at Richneck Elementary School in Newport News. There was an altercation between the teacher and the student before a single round was fired. Authorities getting social services on scene and continuing to investigate. I'm Ryan Daniels, USA News.
Tejibo Tea Club's original Pure Pouty Arco Super Tea helps build red corpuscles in the blood, which carry oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate themselves. The immune system needs oxygen to develop, and cancer dies in oxygen. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit shopsupertea.com. The first word is shop, spelled S-H-O-P, then the word super, and then the word tea. The complete website is shopsupertea.com, or call us at 818-984-6100 Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-984-6100. Shopsupertea.com.
I had no idea it would destroy my life, but before it happened, I had a successful business in Austin, Texas. Everyone laughed at me when I shut that business down, but I could not ignore the wake-up call. I was volunteering on a project to get locally grown food into a school. That project was a complete failure, and I discovered that there were few local farmers. There's only 4 days' worth of food in the grocery stores, and everything comes 1,500 miles via a just-in-time trucking system. I lost friends and family who told me I was crazy to worry about that, but I kept at it. I'm Marjorie Wildcraft. Those of us who know what's going on in the world know you need to become self-reliant before the dollar collapses. I've created a free webinar at gcnfood.com. I can show you, like I've shown hundreds of thousands of people, how to grow lots of food, even if you have no experience, you're older, or you're out of shape. Do it now, before the stores are boarded up and food is not available at any price. Go to gcnfood.com. gcnfood.com.
Appreciate what we do? Help us advertise, market, and promote for just $5 a month at amp.freetalklive.com.
Yeah. It is Free Talk Live. You got time. If you want to join the show here, the number is 603-283-6160. That's 603-283-6160. Been focusing in on the cryptocurrency threat to the status quo, which is a completely peaceful threat, which is why it's so successful so far. Because the government knows how to deal with violence. They know. They're ready for that. They got Bearcats. They got machine guns. They got armor. They got grenades. They're ready for that. They know how to handle that. But they don't know what to do about people just out-competing them, about a better system that exists that people could just choose. And they really get upset about that. They're going to use violence to try to stop it, but the system that is a threat to the government system is a nonviolent system inherently. It is a peaceful system. It is Bitcoin. It is cryptocurrency. These alternatives, gold, silver, these other things that people can get into without having to ask permission from anybody. Dean and Chris here in the studio tonight. Let's go to David in Georgia. You're on Free Talk Live. Go ahead, David.
Hey, quick thing. First of all, I was just listening to that FSN. And can we go ahead and get rid of this whole January 6th nonsense? We know the government was afraid of the people. We know the government is afraid of the people. With that rant on that little bit over, just the FSN news story caught my attention there.
Oh, I didn't hear what the content of it was. And by the way, most of our listeners on radio stations probably have no idea. But that said, certainly the mainstream media has been blowing January 6th out of proportion for the last 2 years, and I suspect they didn't stop doing that today.
Oh, no. It was just on FSN that they were giving the police that helped quell the Capitol rioters medals of whatever. Yeah, bull. Baloney. Anyway, with that being said, I'm a bit worried about Bitcoin.
Oh.
Because Bitcoin's like long-term future. because of the fact that it's only got, you know, 7 transactions per second capability of being done. And as the Bitcoin halving keeps happening and less Bitcoin are being created, there is less and less incentive to continue to mine it, and the hash rate will go down, making it easier eventually to attack and 51% or take over. This is solved, a lot of it is solved by Monero's tail emission, because there's 430 new Monero created per day, which would technically make it slightly inflationary, but it's asymptotically zero. And
what does that mean?
It means it approaches zero. So, like, as it continues to inflate ever so slightly, it closer and closer approaches zero. So right now it's like 0.9%, and in like a couple of decades it'll be 0.5%, and even gold inflation is like 1%.
Oh, I see what you're saying. So you're saying that when a Monero block is mined, which again, Monero, for listeners that don't know, is a Bitcoin competitor. It is the privacy, is sort of the world's premier privacy coin, so you can't technically verify that there's 400 of them coming out or 430 of them every, what would you say, it was every minute? When are the blocks on Monero?
The blocks are 2 minutes,
two minutes.
It's 0.6 Monero per block, so it's like 430 per day.
Oh, per day. Okay, I got you. Thank you. So 430 per day, and what you're saying is the number 430 is not going to go down over time, but the percentage of what that represents of the total supply of Monero obviously is going to get smaller over time.
Correct, because when it's 18 million like it is now, another 430 is whatever percent of 18 million. But then when the supply in 20 years is 25 million, well, 430 is a smaller percentage of 25 million than it is of 18 million now.
Okay. That makes sense.
It asymptotically approaches zero.
Well, Sandra, so your prediction was that Bitcoin itself is going to have a tough time, given that at roughly every 3 to 4 years, Bitcoin's mining reward cuts in half. So right now it's, I believe, 6.25 Bitcoin per roughly every 10 minutes when a block is mined onto the blockchain. And for listeners that don't know, the blockchain is the public ledger with Bitcoin that has every transaction on it from the very beginning of Bitcoin back in 2009. And the blocks are the transactions that have happened. That's them being permanently added to that that ledger. And so every time a block is mined onto the blockchain, those transactions become permanent, they're there forever, and then the miners get paid this mining reward, which is going to get cut in half, I believe, sometime next year, meaning 2024, isn't that right?
That's correct. Like April of 2024 is when they're predicting it.
Right, so it'll go to 3.125 Bitcoin instead of 6.25 or whatever it is. And so that will mean fewer Bitcoin come out. But I guess the prediction would be that, well, Bitcoin will likely be worth more at the time, so therefore incentive will still be present for miners to come into the picture.
I mean, doesn't it readjust anyway automatically? If
the difficulty does readjust. That's
right,
true.
So if there's fewer miners...
Well, what he was saying, though, Chris, is that even though... The mining difficulty will readjust, meaning that if there are fewer miners, it becomes easier to find the Bitcoin block at that point.
Yeah.
And if there are more miners, it becomes harder to find the Bitcoin block. However, what he's saying, what David's saying is, if the total amount of mining power goes down over time, then that makes the network easier to attack. Is that right, David?
Yeah, and another thing is, the fee marketplace that they want really hasn't shown up, because when you have to pay $100 to get a Starbucks coffee for the transaction fee, like back in 2017, it's kind of a failed as a currency. 7 transactions per second and really high transaction
fee. Yeah, well, that was what they intended to do. That's why MasterCard invested in the digital currency group that invested in Blockstream, and AXA, a major international banking institution, invested in Blockstream years ago. So they then started paying the Bitcoin, the key Bitcoin programmers, to essentially cripple Bitcoin and stop it from being able to do what, like you said, more than 7 transactions per second.
David, let's back up a second. So you're not saying that the issue can't be fixed. You're saying it's not going to be fixed, and therefore they're going to undermine it. Those behind it are undermining it.
That's what we've been saying here for years.
Right. I'm trying to understand it. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, because nothing happens. So like the Bitcoin people know that this is a problem, but it's so entrenched that there will only ever be 21 million and there should only be 1 megabyte blocks that you can't increase the transactions per second because of the 1 megabyte blocks, and therefore the fees would go down. And you can't increase the 21 million cap because then the whole premise of Bitcoin only having 21 million is broken.
Mm-hmm.
This digital gold thing is a complete... If I'm understanding correctly, Satoshi wanted Bitcoin to be a digital cash, not digital gold.
Right. It says it in the white paper. It's on the front page. It's the subtitle, electronic, yeah. Peer-to-peer electronic cash.
And in that case, Bitcoin has failed at what it was meant to be.
Yes, that is true. But it was. But luckily, it's an open marketplace, and there are a zillion other opportunities and other options. You mentioned Monero. That's one of a myriad of other options, the privacy coins. There are others, other privacy coins competing with Monero. And there are other cryptos that are competing to be electronic cash, such as Dash and Bitcoin Cash. So, I mean, there are other opportunities out there. It's just that Bitcoin is the first on the scene. It has that network effect. It has that first mover advantage, and it has the name recognition as a result of that. And the rest of the cryptocurrency alternatives, they just don't have the recognition. People don't know what they are.
I've always heard it said, and I kind of agree with this, that Monero is what Bitcoin people thought they bought.
Yeah. In 2011, yeah. I think at this point, I think the illusion of anonymity has been pretty smashed as far as Bitcoin is concerned. But there was a time in the past when that was what people said about Bitcoin, and they were wrong.
It's, you know, anonymity. But, yeah, I mean,
some people were saying it was anonymous back in the day. They even said it during my trial. They even said that.
Well, they explained, and the crazy thing about your trial was the prosecutor explained it, and that explained the difference between anonymity and pseudo-anonymity, and then he goes on to call it anonymous.
During his closing statement.
Like, okay.
Yeah. David, anything else?
No, that's all I had.
Thanks, man.
Thanks for taking the call.
Yeah, I appreciate the thoughts here tonight. There's no doubt Bitcoin as a electronic cash is dead in the water, and it's never going to be that. It at one time was. There was a time when you could send a microtransaction with Bitcoin. If you wanted to send, 2 cents worth of Bitcoin to someone, it would cost you usually less than a cent to send that.
I remember that. We did it on a weekly basis, if not more.
Yeah. And then in 2017, that cost went through the roof, and it went all the way up to, you referenced, I think, $100, or he referenced $100.
Yeah, something like that.
That did happen on some cases. I think the average hit like $10, $15, $20, $30 at one point. And that's way too much. You can't have that.
I don't think I ever paid $100, but
me neither.
Yeah.
But you can't have that. I mean, I did pay paid $5 to make a transaction at least more than once. But you're not going to do that if you're going to buy a hamburger. You're not going to pay a $5 tax to the mining network just to be able to use crypto. So, I mean, we already have, as we were discussing, Chris, enough trouble just getting libertarian activists who have crypto to spend that crypto. That is hard enough, and that's with the ones that don't have big fees, right? That's with the ones that cost a fraction of a penny to send to somebody, like Dash or Bitcoin Cash. Just getting them to spend that is hard enough.
I think you're right, especially certain people within the community. I don't necessarily know this is the case across the community, but definitely certain people.
It doesn't happen enough, man. I mean, there's cryptocurrency meetups where still it's like me, you, Bonnie, and maybe one other person coming out. I can't spend crypto. It's not like I'm off the map.
That's true.
Aria's off the map. She can't spend crypto. So, like, where's the... Even the guys in Manchester, there's a ton of crypto people there, but they don't even go... When they go to their crypto meetup, they don't even go to a restaurant that takes crypto. So, like, what's going on?
I think this is more... I don't know. How do I say this?
And they're losing locations as a result of that.
Yeah, I think this is kind of one of these, situations where, we have a lot of, how do I say this, leaders, but we don't necessarily have a lot of leaders within the crypto space, within the Liberty circles. And it's everybody's doing something different, right? Mm-hmm. And so we're all in one place, and, crypto gets exchanged fairly often, but...
Person to person, that does happen.
Yeah.
I'm not going to take that away from... That's true. Like, within the libertarian movement here, there's a lot of it. You'll see it maybe a little more often at, like, a market day. Everybody at market day, for instance.
For sure.
And for listeners that don't know, that's where, like, once a month in most regions, there's there's a day on which people come together in like an open room and set up tables. And you know, if you you've got a you make honey at home, or you make crafts, or you're growing pigs and slaughtering them, you bring your market, you bring your product to market, and you can sell it. And most of them will take crypto. Almost everyone there will accept crypto, and that happens. So that does happen.
Yeah, I mean, I would say I very rarely will resort to pulling out cash from my pocket, at mm-hmm. least within the libertarian, you know, community here. That's much, much more rare.
I'll give you that.
I will pull out cash when it comes to, like, going to McDonald's or something like that, right?
That's what you have to do.
Right, because I'm definitely not going to use a credit card. but yeah, certainly it's there's different. And, you know, it's interesting. The more you look for it, I think the more you'll see, you know, cryptocurrency you know, places you can spend it and use it and stuff. So you do have to
yeah, but it's, a little bit. It's faltering though. Like I'm the one that takes care of the map. Okay.
No, I know.
I go on coinmap.org. I can't use crypto, but I can still talk about it, right?
So yeah,
I call the businesses up that are on the map. You know, roughly once every couple of years. You know, I don't do it all the time, but every now and then I'll go through and I'll say, hey, do you still taking Bitcoin?
We got a couple problems right now,
and they're
right?
not. They're not. Right. A lot of them
and
are.
You're right. But we got a couple
some
problems.
Are.
We got a couple problems right now.
Yeah.
And some of them are pretty major problems. One is government, right? But
sure.
Two is
that scared people.
Our systems. True. Our systems are broken. But we are working on fixing them, and I'm trying. I'm trying. Here.
I get it. But you know, the point is the
we're
people.
Get it fixed.
I understand that.
Yeah.
But the fact is the crypto community, while it may be good internally, is not very good at going external. Meaning it's not good at going
marketing.
To the businesses. It's not good at
yeah.
marketing.
No,
now,
terrible at marketing.
If things are broken, you can't market them. I understand that.
Right.
But in some cases, they could still go to those businesses that are still accepting crypto, the ones that still have the business owner working at it,
sure.
where they can just pull out their own personal wallet. And that there's ways to do this. Where there's a will, there's a way.
Mm.
And what I'm saying is there's not enough of a will within the crypto community. That's my observation, having, you know, looked around and having called business owners and having them
yeah.
told me. I mean, having them tell me before the problems you're talking about,
yep.
the technical issues that have been plaguing a certain payment system that we love very much, that before that happened in Manchester, where there are actual crypto people, there's a lot of them, because Manchester is like the big city. That's where most people move to, is in that area.
Yep.
So, like, they can't say there's no one here. Okay, so there's a lot of people there. There was a chocolate place on the main drag there. It's called Elm Street. It's not Main Street. It's called Elm Street for whatever reason in Manchester. That's the main road. That's where all the downtown businesses are. There was a chocolate place that was taking crypto. I talked to the owner there a couple years ago. He told me they stopped taking it. He is personally a user of cryptocurrency. So he's not one of those business owners that just took it. Like, there's some business
yeah.
owners that'll just take it because they know their customers want it, and they want to make their customers happy. They don't really care that much here or there about crypto, but they're open-minded enough to just say yes to doing that. This guy's into crypto. He's like a trader. He's got his own collection of crypto, and he's into it. But what he told me was, he's not taking it as business anymore because no one wants to spend it.
Yeah, I mean, I understand where you're coming from, and I can certainly see why you'd be pessimistic.
I'm optimistic. I'm just saying that's the status quo, and it's not what it should be.
I know. I would love to see more happening, right?
Mm-hmm.
Don't get me wrong. I don't know if that's the best example, only because somebody selling chocolate is not the kind of thing that most
Murphy's
people
Murphy's Tap Room doesn't take it either now. I was giving you the easy one.
That is a better example, I think.
That's a terrible example because the libertarians
well,
are there.
It's a better example of what you're trying to say, okay? What you're trying to argue.
But still, it's no excuse because you could still, once in a while, you could have a Bitcoin meetup that met at the chocolate place. You could. You could go there, but people that didn't want to buy chocolate could get a bottle of water or whatever, and some people would buy some fancy chocolates, and the owner would just have a ball being able to collect crypto once a quarter or something like that. If you did it once a quarter, it would be something for that guy. Instead, he's got zero.
I think it's definitely I think the way to phrase it is it's much, much easier to get and keep on board restaurants.
Agreed.
But at the same time,
women love chocolate, though. I know you're not into women or anything like that, but yeah. But a lot of people really like chocolate. I personally not a huge fan of it. Like, I could live without it totally.
I'd buy chocolate. I'm just not in that area, and I also probably wouldn't be buying it enough to make it worth keeping it.
But I guarantee, maybe that's true, maybe it's not. But I guarantee you, if that was in this area, we would go there. We would have our crypto meetups there. We wouldn't go there every week. But we go there every now and then, and it hopefully would be enough to keep the staff trained, to keep the owner, you know, to where he's like, okay, yeah, this is people buy, right? Like, that's all that you need.
You know, and another reason, you know, I'm going to be a bit of an optimist here, but you haven't been around non-libertarians enough. Because if I was in Flemington, New Jersey, where I moved from, right, there wasn't a single person I knew who used crypto.
Oh, hell no.
So, I mean, as pessimistic as... You're sounding real pessimistic here.
I'm just telling it like it is. That's not pessimism.
It's not going as well as I would like it to, and I think you're saying that basically too. But
well, of course not. I mean, obviously, what we want to see happen is the way this can go better is if more liberty-minded people who are into crypto move to New Hampshire,
yep,
and do things with their cryptocurrency openly. Because it's great to go to market day and be able to buy anything you want for crypto. That's effing awesome. I mean, that's a great experience for somebody to have. But what does that do for the community beyond the libertarian community? What does that do for, you know, the real life acceptance of crypto? It does absolutely nothing for it.
You know, if we're going to get pessimistic, I think I'll also say I wish there were more libertarians running their own businesses accepting cryptocurrencies. But so many people move and they have a job.
Yeah, well, most people aren't entrepreneurs.
I know, and it's so disappointing. I think we do have a more there's more entrepreneurs here that are libertarian, but it's not as many as I would like it to be. You know what I mean? Yeah. There's a lot to complain about in the world, I think. I like to lead by example.
Me too.
You know, I have a business. I'm an entrepreneur. I accept cryptocurrency. I try to encourage other people to accept it and use it and everything.
That's all you can do.
You know,
and that's all you can do. And that's one of the things we've done here, I think, very well in Keene over the years, is we have been the sort of the tech leaders of the liberty movement up here. For instance, you know, Keene adopted Telegram in 2011 or 2012 or something like that, way before anybody was doing it. Everybody was on Facebook and whatever other systems. Now, yeah, Telegram is still a centralized system. It ain't perfect, but it was a way better option at the time. And then finally, like 2 years ago, the Free State Project adopted Telegram for the Porcupine Freedom Festival for its chats.
Which is really funny because it was after we all basically got on to
the Matrix.
And you're right. We're still leading the way. I mean, we got Mastodon, and we've got Nextcloud now, and
the calendar system from Nextcloud.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean,
we're doing more decentralizing here, and we're showing people the way. You're saying, look, hey, come on over. The water's fine. Come on in.
We're not the only ones. It's not just Keene. Portsmouth, the Seacoast. They got Nextcloud too.
Shell, I think, did, right?
Yeah, I think the Shell. Yeah, they have Nextcloud for their calendaring stuff too. So it's we're making progress here. We do have a lot of leaders. It's just, you know, everybody's working on a little bit of something else. And look, I should be the first one to adopt some of this stuff, and I was, but at the same time, it's like it should have happened, you know, 5 or 6 years ago in a lot of cases.
Sure.
You know, and it didn't, because we all have a limited amount of time, you know.
Yeah, that's true. And again, I don't want to make it sound like I'm pessimistic. I'm optimistic. I have to be.
This is the most pessimistic thing I've come at. I didn't even know.
It's not pessimism,
dude. You're the biggest optimist. So for you to say anything that's even remotely pessimistic.
You're misdefining this. It's not pessimism. Pessimism is a fear-based mentality. The idea that things are going to be going bad or are going bad or going wrong. And I'm just telling you what's happening. I'm just saying that in a place where it shouldn't be like this, Manchester, New Hampshire, where there's a much higher number of cryptocurrency advocates and users, like they claim in Manchester that they have the longest running cryptocurrency meetup in, like, I don't know if it's the world or the country, but it's a big claim, and it's true.
Yeah.
They deserve that claim. It's a big one. They've had it more than a decade on a weekly basis, people having a crypto meetup. But you know what? they haven't converted the place where they're having that meetup yet. How could you? How can you do that? How can you not convert
the place? Okay, that you are having the meetup.
The restaurant or wherever it is, the bar.
I thought you were talking about Murphy Tap Room. That's not where they're holding it.
For whatever reason, they didn't have it there. I don't know. Somebody doesn't like Murphy. I don't know what the deal is with that.
They have
but they have
a lot of events there, though, so it might be why, too.
At Murphy's? That could be it. But, like, look, man, if you're going to do a crypto meetup, have it at the place that takes crypto. Now, because they weren't doing that, Murphy stopped taking crypto. Because the free staters that were coming in there weren't spending it.
So my understanding,
and this comes back down to the problem that I was talking about earlier with people will not spend their crypto.
Yeah, I think you misunderstood what was going on there. I'm partially default. So when I've gone in a couple times and tried to spend it, I wasn't able to, but that's because they were super busy and there was one waiter staff for like 40 people. I don't necessarily, from what I've heard from other people, I don't think that's the case all the time. It's just...
Everyone I've asked has said they don't take it anymore. Every single person. And when I was in there with you a few weeks ago, we took a night off and we were doing some activism out in the Manchester area. I think this was in November. But I asked specifically the waitress who was in there if she could take crypto payments. She said she didn't know if that was even a possibility anymore. And other people I've spoken with about the same thing, they said that the problem is that they don't even have the tablet, it's not charged, the staff doesn't know how to use it. By all effective purposes, no one has spent cryptocurrency in that location for months. Ooh. I mean, if not more than a year. I don't know when the last time it was. We used to be able to go to the AnyPay map, and we used to be able to see for ourselves when that was, and... We don't get to see that anymore, but if we really wanted to, I bet we could figure out what their wallet address is and then check the address.
Yeah, you're probably right. I have to say, though, the fact that people are saying they're not accepting it, if you keep getting turned down and they keep saying no,
they'll stop asking.
Yeah, they'll stop asking. Right. So, yeah.
So that's the fault. I mean, that's their fault, right? Like, it's the fault of that community for not doing what it took because they have meetups there every week. And if somebody was asked, if at least one person every week asked about crypto, they would get a yes.
Hold on, Ian. I was able to spend cryptocurrency at Murphy's Tap Room within the last 6 months, though. So
wow, congratulations.
So there was at least one time where somebody actually did know how to use a tablet, and they digged the tablet out, and I was able to spend it.
Well, let's throw a party. That's great.
But you're right. I think two other times I wasn't able to spend it in the last 6 months. Yeah. So
it's bad.
Yeah.
It's bad. It's a bad situation, and it was completely avoidable, because if somebody had just gone in there and on a regular basis had spent it regularly, then the staff would have kept up on it, and they would have kept the thing charged or whatever, right? So now it's dead. We're out of time for tonight. It just takes a little bit of consistent effort. That's all.
Definitely.
So I am optimistic, and I think those people just need to get on the ball in those other places, because we're still doing good here, even though I'm out of the game.
We'll get them back on board.
Yeah, we'll see you tomorrow night. Online in the meantime, freetalklive.com.
If you're concerned about the power grid and want to generate your own supply of off-grid electricity, this will be the most important message you'll hear this year. Here's why. We now have a small number of solar generators back in stock. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving backup power when you need it most. And unlike gas generators, solar generators run quietly, emit no dangerous fumes, and produce an endless supply of free electricity from the sun. Whether it's wildfires, dangerous weather, power grid issues, or just getting off the grid, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. Even better, all this week, radio listeners get over $700 in free off-the-grid bonuses, too. Go to MySolarBackup.com to learn more and check availability. That's MySolarBackup.com. Look for the free report, Crisis Cooling, how to make absolutely sure your meat, milk, and medicines stay safe and cool in any power outage. Yours free at MySolarBackup.com.
I spend a lot of time in the garage, but even more time in the rain, sleet, and mud. In 95, I helped tow your moving trailer. In 05, I helped you get out of a ditch. Yeah, I know I'm a bit rusty, and sadly in 09, it was sparks from me, your handy chains, dragging behind your truck that accidentally started a wildfire.
Sparks from dragging chains can start a wildfire. Spark a change, not a wildfire. Visit SmokeyBear.com, brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
Only you can prevent wildfires.